Why learn a language that no one speaks anymore? The enduring allure of Latin and ancient Greek. Educators and schools are balancing a lot of demands on their curriculum these days. For example, there's the emphasis on STEM classes, science, technology, engineering, and math. But also, many employers want students to graduate with better communication and writing skills. Others are looking for kids qualified to enter the trades, such as auto mechanics and electricians. Colleges want to see advanced math and foreign language on kids' applications. The list goes on. So where does the study of ancient so-called dead languages fit in? Advocates say Latin and ancient Greek are more relevant today than ever. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we'll talk with a Bowdoin College professor and high school Latin teacher about the value of the classics and the languages they were written in. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. For some, studying Latin or ancient Greek is a means of learning about past civilizations. For others, it's a way to better understand modern languages. Today on Maine Calling, we're going to discuss the enduring interest in those ancient languages. Joining me in our studio, Barbara Wyden-Boyd. She's a professor of Latin and Greek at Bowdoin College. She also teaches courses on the classical world in translation, including courses on Ovid's presence in modern and contemporary literature. She's published several textbooks and several scholarly books. Phuc Tran has taught Latin, Greek, German, and Sanskrit at independent schools in New York and Maine. He currently teaches at Wainfleet School and is working on a memoir to be published by Flatiron Books. As always, we want to hear from you. Did you study Latin or ancient Greek? Are you glad you did? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome to both of you on this beautiful sunny day. Phuc, I'll start with you. How did you get interested not only in learning Latin, but Latin, Greek, German, and Sanskrit?
Okay, this is the rest of the hour now.
No fair.
No, I'll cover it sometime for you, Barbara.
I went to undergraduate. Originally, my intent at least was to be a double major in English and art. And I think by the end of the first semester, I felt like those were not good fits for me. And this friend of mine in undergraduate just randomly said one day, I'm taking ancient Greek. It's really hard and fun. I was like, hard, fun. That sounds interesting. You know, it's high effort, high reward. So I signed up for Greek, and I took it for the rest of that year. And it was incredibly hard, and I loved it. And then the following year, I signed up for Sanskrit and Greek, which I was taking. And then by the end of my sophomore year, I thought, I should probably learn Latin. So then I learned Latin, and then I also did German my junior year. My intent
Isn't
was
this
to go
interesting?
To graduate
school. It didn't start in high school.
No.
You didn't take any of these languages in high school.
Yep. So I did not take any foreign languages in high school. I just fell into it.
Wow. You must really have an aptitude for language, Phuc. That's amazing.
Thanks. I don't think so. I think I just, I think that's the
beauty of. No, I think he must.
I think that's the beauty of the classical studies, though. I think that no one has any sort of, you know, claim or purchase on it. You just,
right.
It's hard. You know, it's like hiking the AT. Like, who belongs on the AT? Whoever wants to hike it, you know? And I feel that way strongly about the classics as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Is that fair to say, Barbara?
I think so, yeah. Nobody owns it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's the very fact that the speakers of these languages aren't around anymore, but the languages survive, mean that we have as much right to them as anybody.
Mm.
All of us do.
Barbara, how did you get interested in
ancient
languages?
Yeah, well, I do go back to high school, although my trajectory in some ways was similar, a little less exotic, but some similar in some ways to Phuc's. I actually started Spanish in high school, my first year in high school, and I loved languages. I just thought that was great. And then in my next year, I picked up Latin, so I was doing Spanish and Latin. And then somehow, crazily, the following year, I was doing Spanish, Latin, and French. And then in my last year of high school, the Latin teacher experimented with Greek. So I was doing Spanish, French, Latin, and Greek in my senior year in high school. And I think my interest in languages, I can identify as something that started much earlier. I remember seeing Latin text as a little kid and wondering how could four words in Latin mean eight words in English. And so it just kind of grew from there.
Mm. Yeah. It's fun. I think, mm-hmm. and I have to confess, I took 2 years of Latin mm-hmm. a long time ago. And what I liked about Latin versus French is that I always felt self-conscious trying to speak French because I know my accent is terrible, mm-hmm. but there is no accent, is there, when you're right. speaking a language that's not being spoken? And Fuchs, like, sort right. of making a face. Well, yeah. maybe there is a right and wrong way.
Well, there's a right way and a wrong way, but I think you're right, and I think there are students for whom that is an apparent benefit. I think they find out pretty quickly, though, that actually maybe that's not the most important thing about what they're doing. That, and in fact, it's really hard yeah. to learn Latin and Greek.
So yeah. how do you all teach? I remember my mm-hmm. Latin teacher. We learned cheers for declensions, mm-hmm. Songs. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. I still remember the cheer that started mm-hmm. hick, hike, hoke. I don't mm-hmm. remember the whole thing. Mm-hmm. What
please,
do you do?
Please, please.
How do you cement this difficult language into your high school students who have so much on their minds?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I think I have several mottos in my Latin class. My students hear often I say, Latin class is like a shark. Once it stops moving forward, it dies. So I think there's a certain speed to which we do the right. material that is essential because, you know, then they're not sitting around feeling bored. I think there's a lot of, you know, also what I call drill killing. So mm-hmm. they just have to let it move on. I think it's also, I think they like being presented with something that's really challenging. And I don't sugarcoat that at all. I just think this is super hard, but you are part of a long 2,000 year mm-hmm. lineage of students who have, you know, studied Latin. So, you know, get in line and let's do this and let's have fun.
Right. All right. right. Barbara, I'm guessing right. Bowdoin College where you teach.
Right.
Latin and Greek have been probably taught since the very beginning, right?
Absolutely. In fact, if you look at the catalog, such as it is, from any year in the 19th century, you'll see that you really had to have both Latin and Greek for your admission. And almost your entire curriculum during certainly the first three of your 4 years in college had to do with classical texts.
When did that change? When did Latin and Greek cease to become something that was expected from an educated person?
The big shift really happens after World War II, when college education generally opens up and becomes more accessible to more people. To people from every background, every class. And it's no longer just sort of an elite privilege to go to college. And with that, you start to see a major shift. And so that Latin and Greek are still there, and they're still central to what was being taught in the 50s, 60s, even into the 70s. But they're no longer required the way they had been previously. You know, in the 1940s, if you wanted to go to Harvard or Yale, you must have taken Latin and Greek to get in. And that's simply not the case anymore.
Latin seems to be taught more widely than ancient mm-hmm. Greek. Why do you all think that is?
Greek is hard.
Yeah.
Super hard.
Latin is hard, but I always tell my students that with Latin, it's a sort of slow but steady, difficult ascent, right? That it gets harder and harder the further you go. But gradually you get, you know, you build up your ability and you can tolerate it. Whereas with Greek, the learning curve is incredibly steep at the beginning. Mm. And so students, like how Fuchs describes himself, who when they take it and they fall in love with it, then they do great in the following years. And I think it actually gets easier, believe it or not.
I would agree
but that first couple of years is really, really difficult.
Fun fact, I did not wear glasses before I started taking Greek. I literally, no, I went blind, like not blind, but nearsighted. You know, one day I looked up and everything was blurry. Right. I didn't know what was wrong. And then
it was Greek.
It was Greek. I look back, freshman year.
Well, you have to learn this entirely. It's really a challenge to learn another alphabet and to learn how to form complex sounds by putting together different letters. That's really difficult.
So now that you've shared that, Fouke, I'm going to turn this around and say, now give us a sales pitch. I mean, so much is asked of schools these days. There are, big movements to teach more coding and good reasons for that. Big reasons to teach more trade skills and good reasons for that. Simple communication over and over again. You hear employers want kids who just can write well. And then you've got the emphasis on the STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. Fouke, where is there room for ancient languages, and why are they as important as all the things I just named?
I think I'll definitely pitch this to you also. Right. I mean, I think that the question is it's sort of phrased backwards, right? Like, I think, it's sort of like why, there are so many great side effects to learning classical languages, but I think at the end of the day, you learn them because they're beautiful. They are an avenue into a conversation that is very old and very deep, and it yields incredible insights into your language, your ability to think logically, rhetoric, and grammar. I think it's like when people talk about the quote-unquote benefits of learning a musical instrument, and I always think, well, what about just playing music that's beautiful? Like, isn't that the first and most obvious thing? Like, why, because, there are lots of sort of cognitive and neurological benefits to learning, the piano, for example. Right. But no one sits down at the piano and says, I'm going to learn the piano because I want to develop all these new synaptic connections in my mind. They say, I just want to learn how to play Debussy or whatever. So I think I always tell my students the reason that you should learn Latin is because you want to read Catullus or Virgil or Horace or Ovid.
Right.
And all these other amazing things are going to happen, but they're all side effects, very much like training for a marathon or a triathlon or, hiking the Appalachian Trail. No one hikes the Appalachian Trail because they say, I want to get to, Georgia. There are faster and better ways to get there.
Yeah, that's true.
But the effort is really where it's at, I think.
Right.
Barbara, what would you like to add?
I would add to that, and I think I'm very much on the same page as Fouke here. But for me, learning a language, any language, is, I think, a really fundamental part of our education. Because learning a language is how you really learn to think. You learn how to think about words, about individual words, how words work together. But add to that, it seems to me, with Latin and with Greek, they're what I think of as a value-added kind of choice linguistically. It's wonderful to learn any modern language and to learn how to speak it and communicate with other people in that language. But when you're learning Latin and Greek, you're learning how virtually all Western languages work. You're learning not just their grammar and their syntax, but the underlying structures that we started learning probably before we were born, when we were hearing those people out there make sounds that had meanings. You also learn that there's a real system to the way language works, that individual words are not just random phenomena, which is a Greek word, by the way, not just random phenomena, but that function as members of a large and growing family. And that's a metaphor I use with my students when I'm introducing them when I teach elementary Latin, that all the words in Latin are parts of the family, and that the family's alive and that it's constantly developing and interacting. And you can't just isolate one member and study that. You have to understand how it's related to everything else.
And there's also a very practical reason that you might be on Jeopardy someday, right?
Exactly, exactly. As I was just pointing out to some of my students, I believe it was last Wednesday when they were, last week was one of the college competitions, and the final question was based on the ability to know some Latin. It was the ability to translate a pretty simple sequence of five words in Latin, and one student could do it, not the others.
So. You were going to jump in, Fouque.
I was just going to say also, Jennifer, I think like thinking back to, you know, the origins of liberal education, you know, that that the skill set for workers, you know, was divided into three classes. And I think we've lost sight of that or have forgotten it. And so we often are comparing literally apples, oranges, and mangoes, I guess. You know, like, so there was there were the servile arts, you know, for lack of a better word. So those were things like carpentry, plumbing, and woodworking, or, you know, you know, iron, metalsmithing. And then you had the fine arts, right? So painting and things like that. And then you had the liberal arts. And those were the things that freedmen and not slaves were allowed to pursue. And those were the... You know, grammar, logic, rhetoric, astronomy, geometry, et cetera, et cetera. So I think, you know, when we say like, I mean, I feel like implicit in a question like, you know, eliminating foreign languages in favor of STEM things, we're, you know, we're really saying, well, it's not that one is better than the other. They, they're really, they're, you know, shoes in the same pair. And I think you need them both because I read this great example of, you know what happens when you have a highly advanced technological society with no appreciation for the humanities and humanistic endeavors. You get things like Sparta. You get things like Nazi Germany. I'm not saying that if you pursue, you know, it's, those are extreme examples, but I mean, I think they're examples of highly tech-oriented societies that don't have a lot of appreciation for the humanities.
Are there enough of you? Are there enough trained Latin teachers out there?
that is a really, really good question. In fact, there are jobs on the high school level that go begging every year in Maine and throughout the country. But part of the reason why they're not filled is because there simply aren't enough highly qualified teachers to take those jobs. And what we see, and I say unfortunately, not as a reflection on individual teachers, but simply because of the system, we see sometimes teachers who aren't terribly qualified are enlisted to teach Latin and Latin, not Greek, but Latin at the high school level. And unfortunately, it's really difficult for them to make their students love and appreciate what it is they're studying if they themselves haven't really had that experience yet. So it's a challenge. I'm happy to say that at Bowdoin, we've been really successful over the past decade or more in producing some wonderful high school Latin teachers. So.
Well, we have a lot of questions coming in, and I also want to talk about your specialty, Barbara, which is these ancient stories in modern day literature and movies and things like that. And Fouque, I'm sure you follow that closely as well. So if you'd like to join the conversation, our number 1-800-399-3566, our email address talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible. As do Bernstein Shore, a law firm that helps its clients navigate the law and the demands of their industries. BernsteinShore.com. Houston & Company, designers and builders of custom fine furniture with a showroom and workshop in Kennebunkport and online at HoustonAndCompany.com. And Maine College of Health Professions, offering real-world training in nursing, radiology, and nuclear medicine. MCHP.edu.
Killer robots used to be the stuff of science fiction. Now, autonomous weapons are almost within reach.
We're talking about a weapon that could go out on its own and make its own decisions about who to kill on the battlefield.
What happens when humans step back and machines decide who lives and who dies in a war? I'm Ari Shapiro, Army of None, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Join us for All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening.
Later today on This American Life, the true story of Carlton Pearson, who was a rising star in the evangelical movement at a huge megachurch. And then, he says, God spoke to him. told him that everybody's going to heaven, whether they believe in Jesus or not, no hell for anybody. And he starts to preach that.
And I would say, no, 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 my God loves you.
Spoiler alert, things do not go well for him. That's later today.
That's coming up this evening at 11 right here on Maine Public Radio.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the value of learning Latin and or ancient Greek. Joining me today, Barbara Wyden-Boyd, a professor of Latin and Greek at Bowdoin College, and Fook Tran, who teaches at Wayne Fleet School. We invite you to join the conversation. Our number, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. I'm going to start with a short and sweet one, because I think this is a great question. An email from Chris. How is Maine's motto pronounced, long I or short? What exactly does it mean? I lead, I follow, and how do we know? And so Chris did not put this in the email, but it is dirigo or dirigo?
Dirigo.
Accent on the antepenult.
Yes.
What does dirigo that mean, Luke?
So that means the accent is not on the last syllable. It's not on the syllable before the last syllable. It's on the syllable before that.
Okay. And does it mean I lead?
Yes. I direct.
I direct.
Really what it means.
Okay.
Yes.
Thanks,
I'm
Chris.
I'm the boss.
Yeah. I'm the boss. So Maine's flag is declaring that we're the boss. Okay, great. We'll start with Tony, who's calling in from Ellsworth. Hi, Tony. Go ahead.
Hello. Yes, I would like to put the two languages, the Latin and Greek, in historical terms. Greek language proceeds from Latin at least by over 1,000 years. Latin was never a live spoken language by anyone, including the Romans. It was an artificial language invented to be spoken by the elite, so the peasants wouldn't understand. Because everybody was understanding Greek back then, because it was the international language. And that's what the New Testament being written in Greek and being translated, including Latin and so many other languages.
All right, Tony, and thanks for your call. Thoughts?
Yeah. Well,
respectfully disagree.
Yeah, I would have to disagree with the characterization of Latin. Although it in an interesting way, I think it coincides with one of the sort of stereotypes about Latin. I was thinking about there's a wonderful scene in the Monty Python movie Life of Brian, where there's a character who's unhappy with the Roman domination and goes and writes a Roman graffito on a wall, a Latin graffito on a wall, but his Latin is bad. He makes at least 3 different grammatical mistakes in his Latin, and so a Roman soldier comes along and starts essentially tormenting him about the quality of his Latin. And it's a very funny episode.
Romans, they go the house.
Romans go house. They go the house. Yes, is what it says in Latin. So so there is this sense that it's so sophisticated and so complex that, in fact, it's a language that normal human beings wouldn't be able to speak. But that's absolutely not true. Greek is, if anything, far more complex and far more sophisticated in some ways than certainly more articulated than Latin is. And yet there's no question about that having been a spoken language.
So, Barbara, if we were transported 2,500 years back to Italy, would people be speaking the Latin that you all teach?
Yeah, they would. They wouldn't necessarily be speaking in these grand periods of, 100, 200 words of elaborately articulated syntax, but they would certainly be speaking Latin, just as today we don't speak in paragraphs from Henry James or Thomas Hardy, but we do speak a language that would be recognizable to them.
It'd be cool if we did, though.
Yeah, it would, wouldn't it?
I think Tony's point, though, is interesting, is that, from what I understand, Greek was the quote-unquote lingua franca of the ancient world,
Yes.
But particularly because the Greeks fulfilled a mercantile/merchant position in Mediterranean trade. So I remember a professor of mine telling me that he was pretty sure that Jesus, and or historical Jesus, probably spoke Greek with the Romans. I don't know. That's what Bruce Chilton told me.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe.
Okay, Aramaic. Tony, thanks for starting this. We'll move on to Hebron and Cynthia. Hi, Cynthia. Go ahead. You're on Main Calling.
Hi. Thanks for speaking to me today. I'm so excited that you have this topic today.
So are we.
I teach 7th grade Latin. And I really hope that everybody gets across that the reason why we teach Latin is it is so much fun to teach it.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids have a blast. Like I said, I have 7th graders. And can I just share a really short anecdote about teaching?
Sure.
Certainly.
I had the word magnanimous written on my blackboard one day, and I don't even remember why it was there. And this 7th grade boy walked in, and he turned his head to the side, and he looked at the word, and he said, "Great soul." It was like the best teaching moment ever. Like, he really understood the meaning of that word because he knew the Latin roots. And
exactly.
I think of that day and think, wow, my best teaching moment, and I wasn't even saying a word.
So exactly.
It was really great. But I don't know whether you more auspicious teachers of Latin agree with me, but I have my kids very often speak Latin with a Southern accent just so that they get the words out. And they have a good time doing it. And thanks for having this program today. And I hope we get a lot more Latinophiles out there. Thanks. Mm.
Thank you.
Yeah. Weeny, weedy, weeky.
Right?
Thank you. I came, I saw.
Mm-hmm.
I conquered.
I was trying to
conquered.
Say that in a Southern accent.
That's Julius Caesar.
I came, I saw, I conquered. Oh, boy. The recesses of my memory are getting the cobwebs cleaned out. Holy cow. We're going to go to Sacco and Jim. Hi, Jim. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. I want to share a inspirational story that started with Latin. I have a younger brother who struggled in school, couldn't find his niche or his, you know, his desire, enthusiasm with any of the topics. He went to a public school his freshman year, and he was basically on the verge of failing out. And we come from at the time in the 80s, a Catholic family, and my parents were able to send me and my other two brothers to Chevres High School, where at the time they were Jesuit priests. And the deal was, if he failed at the public school, that they would force him to go to this at the time all boys school at Chevres,
right,
and where Latin is a mandatory language, you have to take, I think at the time it was 2 years of Latin.
It was.
My brother didn't want to go. He was forced to go. He had to take Latin, and literally Latin, I would say, saved his life because
wow.
He just blossomed.
Right.
He didn't excel in math. He didn't really find much interest in, you know, English literature, but he had a creative, artistic side. And he just, you know, he started reading Latin, learning Latin.
Right.
And Jesuit priests, he was able actually to speak a dead language.
Wonderful.
First with these Jesuit priests. And here's the great part. So he found his love. He went on at the same time. He started taking French, and he found Latin to be very useful as a Latin, you know, French is Latin based.
Right.
He started getting great grades only after. So he was at his junior year, only 2 years of Latin, but he really, you know, did it night and day. He took the national Latin exam for scholarships to college. Mm-hmm. The junior, he got the highest grade in the country.
Wow. Wonderful. Yeah. And this your story, Jim, really speaks to what I think Fuchs was saying at the beginning of the interview. That is, Latin is, there's no special group to whom Latin belongs, right? It belongs to anybody. And so you never know when a student is going to discover that Latin just brings out some things that had been buried before, you know, these abilities and talents and a real love of learning in a way that it seems to me you're describing. It's wonderful.
All right. Jim, thanks for your call. We're going to move on to John, who's calling from Wiscasset. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I grew up, I learned Latin in Ireland, but I grew up bilingual, Irish and English. So languages are very natural in Europe to have extra languages. And the roots of English, you mentioned, somebody mentioned there, is about 70% of English, of today's English, is derived from Latin. Also,
and Greek. And Greek, too.
Yeah, but I don't know any Greek. But Greek was taught down in the hills of Ireland, you know, back in especially 14, 15, 1600s. Latin and Greek were taught there, but I didn't get Greek at school. Not a lot of Irish speak Greek or learn Greek. But it's interesting, you know, I'm fairly new in Maine, and the car numbers, there's usually two letters and numbers, like people in Massachusetts, the jumble, you know, you never remember a number. You barely know your own number if you do. But here, whoever came up with the system for the car numbers, there's a lot of Gaelic phrases on them, like paw means yes, and tu, two means you, etc. And, of course, some of them say UK and South Africa, SA, etc. And somebody wasn't thinking about the world when they designed that system.
Yeah. No, that's funny,
you know,
John.
People
funny.
Drive around and you tell them that actually means something in another language, and they give you a funny look, of course.
Right,
This is what happened.
John, thanks for your call. Let's see. We'll move on to Larry, who's calling from Bangor. Hi, Larry. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I wish my grade school teacher had studied Latin or Greek or whatever. I remember free and phrase, and I asked him why, and he says, you know, it's just the way it is, and I told him he was stupid, and he said, my problem is I think, or as I get older, I don't so much, but when I was young, I thought in pictures, so I'm kind of a STEM person, but my favorite physics professor, he was a seminary student, and so he had to learn Greek and Hebrew and Latin.
Right.
He decided he didn't believe in God, so he became a physics professor. But, you know, he's my favorite professor because he, you know, any of my questions, like freeze and phrase and whatever else, he could always answer them, even if it wasn't physics.
Right.
And, like I said, I'm a STEM person. Right now I'm trying to study Hebrew. You know, I'm over 70, and it's killing me.
Yeah, good luck.
Great. It's good, though.
Well,
it's
yeah,
you know,
you.
There have been studies that show that one way to put off some of the problems associated with old age is to learn a language, to study a language. It's really good for your brain.
Larry, thanks for your call. Michelle on Facebook writes, I studied Latin with Miss McCormick at Haverhill High School in the mid-1970s. She also taught my uncle and aunt. Miss McCormick would make us recite Latin declensions in unison to help us memorize them, and I can still remember them 46 years later.
Brava.
That's
great.
Latin helped me make me a better speller and writer.
Absolutely.
So. Let's see. We'll go to Susan, who's calling from Brunswick. Hi, Susan. Go ahead.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to let you know, I am a local Latin teacher. I teach homeschool children, and I also teach online for Memoria Press Online Academy. So many things are just resonating with me right now. One, I started learning Latin when I homeschooled my kids. I taught myself Latin and didn't know that I had this thing that I had an absolute passion for. And one thing led to another, took courses at USM, did really well in them, became a Latin teacher, and that's now my career. I was a music major as an undergrad. Just to give you encouragement, Latin is the language among homeschoolers. It's probably the prevailing language that most homeschoolers will use. Starting in as young as third grade, because really at that point, they're developing vocabulary, reasoning skills, grammar, and all of that can be done in one fell swoop with Latin. They
Thank
love
you,
memorizing
Susan.
Declensions and vocab. It's a fabulous language for young children, too.
Right.
That's amazing.
Right. Couldn't agree more.
Susan, thanks for your call. Let's go to Liga, who's calling from Friendship. Hi, go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon. My question is of a more general nature, I think. I'm bilingual. I speak English, and my first language was Latvian, and I had a little mm-hmm. bit of German and Spanish in between. Mm-hmm. And my question is, what criteria is used when languages are classified versus ancient or modern? And so you're referring to Greek today as ancient Greek.
Right,
and
because...
so there's Greek spoken today.
Correct.
So are the Baltic languages, which are a whole separate tree in that Proto-Indo-European
Correct.
Graph, are they considered ancient
no.
or modern?
They're considered modern, although certainly there are earlier forms. I'm thinking, and this isn't my area of expertise, but there are things like Old Church Slavonic, mm-hmm. Which is a language that survives essentially in religious liturgies. But when we use the term ancient languages today, typically, at least in the West, we're talking about the languages that were spoken by cultures that are not really around today. So Latin by the Romans, Egyptian would certainly be one, ancient Hebrew, ancient Greek, Sanskrit, mm-hmm. the language of the ancient peoples of India. And certainly there's ancient Chinese and, you know, other Eastern languages that have ancient forms. But that's really the distinction.
Liga, thanks for your call, and it's going to be the last call for this section of the program. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions, and we're also going to talk, I promise, about these languages and these stories in popular culture. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Federally Law, dedicated to providing effective counsel on all matters of land use and real estate in Maine. Learn more at federallylawmaine.com. Marshall Communications, a Maine-based public relations firm with global reach, working to connect businesses and nonprofits with their targeted audiences. And Norris, helping businesses and schools stay safe through engineered security, life safety, and emergency communication systems. NorrisInc.com.
On the next Fresh Air, interviews with Milos Forman and Harry Anderson, who both died within the past week. Forman was an Academy Award-winning director, known for such films as One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Amadeus, and Ragtime. Anderson was a magician and actor who was nominated for an Emmy for his portrayal of Judge Harry Stone on the NBC sitcom Night Court. Join us.
You can join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock right here on Maine Public Radio. And coming up in just a few minutes at 2 o'clock, Commonwealth Club of California. The guest speaker today is former British Foreign Secretary David Miliband. He's president and CEO of the International Rescue Committee, which oversees the IRC's humanitarian relief operations in more than 40 war-affected countries and refugee resettlement and assistance programs in 28 United States cities. That's David Miliband on the Commonwealth Club of California, coming up in just a bit at 2 o'clock right here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, Latin and Ancient Greek and why schools continue to teach both. Joining me, Phuc Tran. He has taught Latin, Greek, German, and Sanskrit at independent schools in New York and Maine. He currently teaches at Waynefleet. Barbara Wyden-Boyd is a professor of Latin and Greek at Bowdoin College. She also teaches courses on the classical world in translation, including courses on Ovid's presence in modern and contemporary literature. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. I'm going to start with Harry Potter. Phuc, did Harry Potter contribute to an increased interest in Latin classes?
I think so, but the Percy Jackson series is also really influential for at least my students, you know. And, you know, I feel bad because I feel like it's a little bit of bait and switch because they show up thinking they're going to get this intensive study of, the mythology, which we get to eventually, but, you know, it's they're like, wait, what's a declension? Why am I learning to conjugate this verb? I want to learn about Poseidon.
right.
So does Ovid show up today, Barbara?
Yeah, well, the luxury of my teaching as opposed to yours is that I do get the opportunity to to teach a lot about the gods as well as about the declensions. Ovid is everywhere. Ovid is a poet who wrote at the very end of the first century BCE and the beginning of the first century CE. But his work has been influential sort of beyond all bounds. In fact, there was recently a conference, which unfortunately I was not able to go to, but in China, about Ovid. I'm just thinking of a couple of examples that some of the audience members might be familiar with. Ted Hughes, the English poet who died about 15, 16 years ago, one of his last and most widely praised publications was a book called Tales from Ovid, which is a poetic sort of reinterpretation of some of Ovid's mythological narratives. And Mary Zimmerman in 1998 did an incredibly successful play called Metamorphoses that played in New York, and it's been played all over the world. Now it, I happened to see it up at Colby about 10 years ago, really great production of it. I've actually just heard about a show that's coming to New York next year. It's in London right now. It's called Hades Town. It's by an indie pop artist named Aeneas Mitchell, and it's based on the story of Orpheus in the underworld, which is, again, a story that we know thanks to Ovid. So he's everywhere, not to mention in every museum you go to. Any mythological narrative probably comes from Ovid.
Lots of Shakespeare.
Yeah, not to mention Shakespeare. Yes. Yeah, definitely.
I have a tweet from Roddy. Mm-hmm. I would like to point listeners to resources including CANE, Classical Association of New England, and
Thank
ACL,
you.
American
Thank
Classical
you.
League. Both have Thank websites. You. These are resources for educators to engage their students with the living classics community.
Exactly.
Thanks, Roddy.
Exactly. There's also a Maine Classical Association, which is a small but hearty group of mainly high school teachers in Maine who gather every year. And in fact, I was at a big, believe it or not, classics conference in Albuquerque just last week. And so there are a lot of us out there.
Betty on Facebook mm-hmm. writes, I took 3 years of Latin in high school, and it has helped me the rest of my life with word use and definitions, especially in healthcare and education.
Yeah. Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I have to go see my doctor for whatever reason and she tells me the name, the medical name of whatever it is I'm suffering from, I always parse it for her. I take it apart and explain the different parts of the word. So, yeah, definitely.
We'll go to Bill calling from Portland. Hi, Bill. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Longtime listener. I just want to a little anecdote about how modern times knowing Latin can help. I guess when Pope Benedict resigned, the popes give their speeches in Latin.
Correct.
And ordinarily the reporters get the translations ahead of time, but he didn't forewarn anybody. He just blurted it out, I guess, in Latin. Mm-hmm. And there is a female Italian reporter mm-hmm. who understood. She's like, oh my God, he's resigning. So she got the scoop. So
right. That's right. That's right. Yeah. It doesn't hurt that Italian is about as close as you can get to Latin. So,
right.
Yeah.
None of the men in the room knew because they didn't have the translation.
Right, right, right.
Bill, thanks right. for your call. We'll go to Henry calling from Cumberland. Hi, Henry. Go ahead.
Hi there, Jennifer. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
I would love to hear some Latin and some Greek.
Okay.
Have not heard the language.
Okay, we're on this. You're on the spot.
Okay.
Fook, or Barbara, you guys have favorite phrases that you can share with us?
Well, I actually was thinking something I would bring up, not necessarily a favorite phrase, but a very memorable phrase. If you've been to the 9/11 Museum in New York, you may have noticed that there's a line from the Latin poet Virgil on the wall. It says in English, "No day shall erase you from the memory of time." In Latin, nulla dies umquam memorivos eximit aevo. It's quite a beautiful, beautiful line in Latin, and it's a pretty nice translation, but I think for us Latinists, it's always going to be better in Latin.
Okay, your turn, Fouque. Oh, you can give us Greek or Sanskrit if you'd like.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man, Sanskrit. well, let's see. Yeah, I have some shlokas that I had memorized a long time ago, but this is kind of gibberish. You know what? When I was getting my blood drawn once, and my doctor was asking me what I did, and I said, oh, I'm a Latin teacher, and he just blurted. I was like, quo usquatandam abutera Catalina patientiam nostram, which
Brilliant.
Is the opening to Cicero's first oration against Catiline. So, you know, I have this like needle in my arm and there's right. blood draining out of me and he's reciting Cicero to me. It just, I thought, well, I guess if this is how I'm going to die, because he's going to keep going on, this seems fitting. But I survived.
Well, I'm glad to hear you survived. And Henry, is that enough Latin for you?
How about some Greek?
Oh, Greek. Pelea jo Achilleos, Ulamanein. Yeah.
Emuria Kaios. Yeah. Algeteca. It's the opening to the Iliad.
Yeah.
There you go, Henry. Thanks for your call. I appreciate it. We're going to go to Jay in North Yarmouth. Hi, Jay. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you very much. I just wanted to couple of quick comments and get some feedback. All of the languages that we're talking about from Europe and the Near Middle East are really only about 8,000 years old. These are all our languages. We actually spoke them. And there's a connection to the future. Nowadays, our computer languages, when we write functions and methods and procedures, we're literally flexing the muscles of our linguistic heritage. We recreate new languages based on what we know from the past.
Yeah, one of my best students actually went off and double majored in classics and computer science. And then she came back to me and she said, Fouque, you have no idea how much money I'm making in computer science. Why didn't you study computer science?
No, there is actually a strong relationship, I think, just in the brain between studying math and, of course, computer science today and studying languages, that there's something about the way all the pieces work together that's very similar.
Jay, thanks for your call. Moving on, we'll move on to Larry and Caribou. Hi, Larry. Go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Great show.
Thank you.
Hi, Larry.
I tell you, I'd be lost without my Latin and Greek dictionaries.
Oh, good.
But here's the other thing. I don't know whether it was brought up. You know, our founding fathers were, you know, proficient in Latin and Greek, many of them. And, you know, for years and years, we had Latin, you know, Boston Latin, Cambridge Latin.
Right.
You know, Greek and Latin were taught in public schools.
Right.
And the loss of them has meant the loss of, you know, being familiar with people like Seneca and Cicero, et cetera, et cetera.
That's true. Mm-hmm. That's true.
That has been the greatest loss of all, because once you understand just how much wisdom that the Greeks and Latins had, Romans had, it's just amazing. But that world remains shut because...
Right.
People are not familiar with it, and if they took Latin and Greek, they would become familiar with it.
Well, that's, I mean, you can also learn a lot. I agree with you totally, but I think you can also learn a lot from the mistakes that were made in antiquity and from the aspects of blindsidedness that we can see antiquity, the way women were treated, the way the very fact that we're dealing with two cultures that really could not have achieved what they did without slavery. But these are things that We can, I think that's one of the reasons why we are so committed to what we do as classicists, because it allows us to teach people about our past, about the past that really lies behind so many of the things that we experience today, and both the good and the bad. One of the things that I've in one of the classes I'm teaching right now, we were reading Virgil's Aeneid in translation, and I wanted my students to realize that they were carrying the Aeneid around with them, namely on the dollar bill that most of them had in their pockets. And this connects back to what you were saying about the founding fathers. The dollar bill has on it, on the Great Seal of the United States, which was commissioned in 1776, it was it contains a quote from a poem by Virgil when he was foretelling the coming of a new golden age, that is, a new age that would be wonderful everyone would be happy and there would be harmony throughout the world. And that's the phrase that's on your dollar bills right over that funny little pyramid that says, what does it say? Novus Ordo Cyclorum, the new order of ages. Hmm. So it's with us. It's still with us.
Oh, and I just wanted to say, you know, amplifying what Barbara said about connections to our past. You know, in my Pliny class, my students are reading Pliny's letters to the Emperor Trajan, and Pliny is worried about this rise of this radical religious sect,
right,
and these people who are willing to die in the name of their religion, and he's talking about the Christians. So it's just really interesting for my students to read from an ancient perspective about, you know, Pliny as a governor of Bithynia worrying about the rise of a radical religious fundamentalism in the name of Christianity.
Right.
Larry, thanks so much for your call. We just have a few seconds left. Kristen, if you can be quick, go ahead, please.
Well, you really did cover a lot of what I was going to bring in, because I wanted to hear more about the ancient Greek and the importance of storytelling turning into literature with that whole transition from being an oral history like what Homer had to being something written down. But you covered that. But I am going to say that one of the things that is interesting about our language with the ancient Greeks is that here we are a Germanic language. I studied German and I've studied the history of our language, but we're very sticky and we borrow words. Mm-hmm. And of course, all of our education has been Latin and Greek, which is why we have so many words.
Mm. Right.
Because we put them into our everyday language. And a lot of that is Shakespeare. I mean, Shakespeare took a lot of that learned language and brought it to the people.
That's right. And he made up some words too.
Sure
he did. He did.
Yeah. Kristen, thanks so much for your call. And it is going to be the last call of the hour. How much fun this has been. Thank you to our guest, Barbara Wyden-Boyd, a professor of Latin and Greek at Bowdoin College. And Phuc Tran teaches at Waynefleet School. He's the author of a forthcoming memoir from Flatiron Books. Nikki Shields ran the board today. Owen Manahan answered your calls. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives at mainecalling.org. Today's program will be broadcast again tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, the forecast for ticks and Lyme disease in the season ahead. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.